Hey guys, it's James Chester here. You're listening to the Gather Round the Lamp podcast by underagaslitlamp.com.
Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast.
Aimed in towards Archer! That's a fabulous header!
Once again, the target managed the flick on. Oh, brilliantly done! Magnificent from Danny Ings!
He's going to have to go on his own here, and he's perfectly happy to do this! Sensational goal!
Ramsey!
That's a big clap, mate. So.
Gather round, villains, and welcome back to Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast by underagaslitlamp.com. It's a job well done in the end for Unai Emery and his team as Villa Park gets ready to welcome back European nights for the first time in about 12 years. So we'll have a look back at that Brighton game on Sunday and look ahead to hopefully what is a bright new era for the club. I'm your host, Andy. And I'm delighted to be joined by, this week, a UK-based Craig Sturrod. Welcome, Craig.
Hello, Andy. Hello, listener. Yes, UK-based, UK-born, UK-bred. And here I am to talk about Aston Villa's Euro journey right here from sunny old England. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's good. Good to have you back in the country. I think we've all been enhanced by your spirit arriving on these shores and...
I'd like to think so, Andy.
Absolutely, and it was certainly a great atmosphere on Sunday afternoon at Villa Park. As expected, it was absolutely tremendous, and we will come on to that very shortly. But I just want to touch on the news that's been announced today. We're recording this on Wednesday. It's been announced just a mere three days after the glorious event at Villa Park that Ashley Young, my player of the season, I think everyone's sort of hero really this season. It's been announced that he is leaving the club. It was only just after the game when he was commenting that he was hoping that now Villa had secured that European place that he would like to stay and be part of that. But quite a ruthless decision, on the face of it at least, to let him go and not to give him another year's contract. He's coming up to 38 years old. But not many players kind of go back to the club, back to a club where they'd been so successful in their late 30s and go on to enhance their reputation even further. Ashley Young was obviously extremely highly regarded and well thought of from his first spell at the club. And to come back in his late 30s and kind of go again and add to that reputation and that legacy is quite incredible. How do you feel about this decision that's been announced today? And, what do you think of it? First of all,
surprised was my first thought. I did think that Ashley Young would get another year for a couple of reasons. The first one being he's been one of our best players this season. He was your dark horse of player of the season, and that wasn't hyperbolic. Ashley Young's been exceptional throughout the season, while not all of our players have, particularly in the beginning part of the season. There were times where he was holding us together kind of on his own. So surprise would be the first thing. I think that it's really interesting. There's probably a couple of different reasons as to why, and we'll go into those in a minute. But my initial feeling was surprise. I thought with us having a European campaign, obviously, which we'll talk about coming up, the additional games, and Ashley Young being a European trophy winner, it felt like it would be sensible to keep him around for the campaign. But the club have decided otherwise, Andy. What was your response?
I mean, I was surprised. I thought it was an absolute, almost a fait accompli that he'd be staying. I just thought he's such an important member of the squad. And the first team, let's face it, is over 30 starts, I think, or appearances this season. He's played an awfully lot of games. I don't think anyone expected when he signed. He signed for Dean Smith 2 years ago on that free transfer. No one would have expected him to still be at the club now, and least of all playing that many games in a really intensive season as well, a really kind of difficult start to the campaign. And then obviously with Emery coming in and the demands that Emery puts on his players, just being still there at the end, still performing really, really well. You know, that spell where recently when Matt Cash was injured and he played 7 or 8 games on the bounce. I mean, he was broken after some of those games, wasn't he? He was really struggling, but you know, he'd obviously recover well, and he was obviously keeping himself in incredible shape. So, a bit of a surprise. I mean, I can't really think of the reasons to do it other than his age, really. What do you think?
Well, yeah, the reasons. I mean, I think could be a couple. I mean, we have seen a decline in him in recent weeks, I think it's fair to say. And I think because of those back-to-back games that you spoke about, I just don't think that his legs, and this isn't a critique, it's just, you know, Mother Nature, his legs couldn't really deal with that kind of Wednesday, Saturday, where we had those couple of runs back-to-back. I think it was really challenging for him. So that could be maybe Unai seeing that maybe the decline is starting to set in. The second reason, I think, could be if you're being completely ruthless, and you used that word earlier, and you look at the teams above us, the teams we're trying to catch, do any of those teams have Ashley Young in their squad? Brighton, probably not. Liverpool, certainly not. Man City, certainly not. Man United, certainly not. So if you're trying to climb the table, you need to bring in a higher caliber of I don't want to say player, because I think Ashley Young's still one of our best players, but obviously the athleticism and the recovery and other stuff that goes into it. So that would be the other thing. And I guess the third one is perhaps resources. You imagine Ashley Young is costing a lot more than maybe someone like Alex Moreno is on a weekly deal, or someone like Aaron Hickey is, that we were linked with last season, who's now turning into a bit of a star for Brentford. He reported to be on 80 or 90k a week, Ashley Young. So just financially, if you can bring in an understudy on half of that money, it allows Aston Villa to reallocate those resources in other places where they're more desperately needed. Perhaps use some of those funds towards an Asensio or something like that. So those could be some reasons, but again, I'm kind of guessing here, because as I say, it is a surprise.
Mm. Yeah, I think it probably comes down kind of to finances, looking at his age, looking at the potential for him to just kind of drop off the cliff, I suppose. You know, I think sometimes players look like they're coping and managing really well on the surface, and then all of a sudden their legs go at a certain age. It hasn't really happened for Young yet, but you don't want to get into sort of next season, the early part of next season, and suddenly he can't do what you need him to do, and he's just there then as a mascot, isn't he?
Speaking of right backs or full backs, I think that actually happened to us with Elmo, if you remember. I think we gave Elmo. We had Elmo, and so much as we all love Elmo, by the way, so again, I don't want anyone to think I'm digging out Elmo. But, you know, we saw when he came in his final season, it was, you know, it was over for him at the top level. And, you know, he went on to subsequently retire, and that was probably 1 year too far for Elmo. And maybe, as you say, maybe that's the thinking with the Ashley Young decision too.
Yeah, no, I wonder if that's the case, and they're just kind of hedging their bets a little bit with it, and you know, it's a shame. But for Ashley Young as well, he wouldn't want to be a bit part. He wouldn't want to be that feeling of being a mascot, good in the dressing room, all that. He regards himself as a top performer, and he has been absolutely brilliant, I think, this season. Just thinking back to that Man City performance, just astonishing. Just one of the probably one of his most important performances for the club in both spells. But he's been a tremendous player for Aston Villa over two spells. Absolutely brilliant. Two either end of his career, and completely different player each time. And you know, it just shows how, you know, intelligent footballers, you know, can prolong their careers by adjusting their game and eking every bit of ability out of themselves.
Well, yeah, and his former teammates in that illustrious Martin O'Neill team, Gareth Barry, the all-time leading appearance record holder for Premier League footballers. And also you look at James Milner, who's still going, looking like he's going to get another year somewhere as well. So that's the difference, whereas their other teammate, Gabby, who lived perhaps a different type of lifestyle, he was finished by 31. So probably a lesson in there somewhere, Andy, but I can't think what it is.
Not sure. Possibly that live fast, die young type of the situation. But yeah, I mean, it's absolutely right, and we will miss Ashley Young. It's been an absolute privilege to watch him over the last couple of years come back to the club. It's been a real added bonus, really, particularly with Grealish leaving and so on, and the difficulties we've had up until Emery came in. And you know, it's been great having him there, and he's just been a true sort of leader and proper club man as well. And you know, he will be missed. You know, we'll wait to see what the plan is in terms of providing some competition for Matty Cash on that side of the defence throughout the summer. But we'll get onto the Brighton game. Obviously, massive atmosphere at Villa Park. Really huge game. Biggest game for a number of years, really. The fans sort of welcomed the team coach to the ground, which was good. I sort of witnessed some of that, and it was really nice. Really, not raucous, but certainly a nice welcome for the players. And the atmosphere ramped up in the ground very early on during the build up. It was again a really fast start by Villa, wasn't it? And really kind of one of those classic Emery things. How many times have we scored in the first 10 minutes of games this season? Even that that famous win over Brentford, I think we scored 3 in the first 10 minutes, didn't we? But it was Douglas Luiz, freshly named supporters and players player of the season last week. Another really, really dominant performance in midfield. And he started and finished the move for the first goal on 8 minutes. Really nice move and exchange passes with Jacob Ramsey. Picked out an excellent ball. Really waited for Luiz to make the run and picked him out with a lovely pass. And Luiz finished really well. He's clearly loving his time at Villa now, isn't he? And he's obviously recording his best numbers with 6 goals and 6 assists for the season. How far do you think now Dougie has established himself as a main player at Villa for Unai Emery? And might Villa have to fend off a little bit of interest in the summer?
Well, Douglas Luiz has now really emerged from the chrysalis. And he has become a big, beautiful green and yellow butterfly. And it's really incredible to see his kind of growth. Now, obviously, we took on a player who was, I think, was he 19 or 20 when we first signed him? We put him into a central midfield, which consisted, to begin with, of, I think he was alongside Conor Hourihan and Jack Grealish. That was a very short-lived combo in midfield from Dean Smith. And you would say that Douglas Luiz really had a baptism of fire. There were some inconsistencies early days because he was a young player who was trying to run a midfield. And, you know, some of his other partners that season were marvellous. Nakamba, congratulations to him and Luton, by the way. And also the likes of Henry Lansbury. So if we look at it in the fullness of time, you're really asking a lot of a young man who doesn't speak the language. I didn't ever play for Man City, of course, in any competitive games because of visa issues, to come into the hustle and bustle of a Premier League midfield and just be this fully formed, great player. And I think lots of fans got very impatient with that. Lots of fans didn't think that he had it, and lots of fans forgot just how cheap he was. I think he was only £15 million, and just how young he was and inexperienced. He was literally learning on the job. Now, fast forward 4 years, we have a full bona fide Brazilian international, Olympic gold medalist, someone with over 150 appearances, I think now, in the Premier League under his belt. And we have a real bona fide top level midfielder, perhaps our best central midfielder since the likes of Gareth Barry, the likes of James Milner, who we've already mentioned in this podcast. Certainly his numbers are in that kind of ballpark. So the question that you asked in the beginning is, can we keep hold of him? Now, the big fear I have, and we've spoken about it before, is this release clause for Champions League clubs. There's no question in my mind that Douglas Luiz is an absolute Rolls Royce. I put money on it before that he would be a Champions League player long before Aston Villa were a Champions League team, because I saw him as a Champions League player even when others did not. And he is a Champions League player now. If there's a release clause that makes him accessible, you have to worry about that. Because at this point, he's become kind of almost completely indispensable. So you do worry about it, but you hope that the affinity that he has for the club, you hope that the affinity he seems to have for the fans, for the stadium, for Birmingham, for Unai Emery, you hope that that stands us in good stead, and that gives us an opportunity to keep hold of him. Because for us to move forward and get better, we need to keep hold of our best players. And Douglas Luiz is, without question, one of our best players, Andy.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there is obviously, it's kind of speculation, isn't it, that release clause or some sort of arrangement is in that contract. We never really know, do we? You know, there is something presumably in there that made him sort of happy to sign that deal, because he could have left on a free this summer if he hadn't signed that contract. So he obviously was keen to do that, and he was given certain assurances, one would imagine. But we are just seeing him flourish now, aren't we? I think he's really benefited, in fact, from some of the struggles at the club and the fact that he did have to learn on the job. I think we're now seeing that he's, you know, that didn't break him, that actually made him a better player. I think he's, some of those difficulties he had, he was playing as a single kind of defensive midfielder, wasn't he, in Dean Smith's team, and he had some really good spells, certainly in his first or second season, with some really excellent spells, particularly after lockdown and that kind of thing, where he was instrumental to the way we were playing. He has been up and down, but I think that's really stood him in good stead, and I think he's learned an awful lot. He's taken everything on board. And this season, we're just seeing him really flourish and playing in that midfield alongside Camara mainly, and they just look so good. They just look so dominant. With McGinn and Ramsey there as well playing off them, it's just been an absolute joy to watch. And it's really interesting because, you know, I mean, we were crying out for a midfielder in January. We were hoping that Matteo Guendouzi would sign, and we're linked now with people like Marco Asensio and so on, Guendouzi still. But I honestly know, obviously we need to add to the squad, but difficult to see how you dislodge Douglas Luiz and Boubacar Kamara from this team.
Well, yeah, I don't think you do dislodge them, but I do think that this is a new normal for us now in terms of, and we've had problems with this as a fan base, and I include myself in that, with us getting past the first 11 idea And now that we're in European competition, we really do need a squad. So we really do need players to be able to come in and play those European games. And those players need to be of a certain level, and also sometimes horses for courses. You know, sometimes we're going to pop Dendonka in there for certain games, I imagine, as Emery has. Sometimes we're going to go more attacking, and it's going to be McGinn in central midfield, and Guendouzi adds to that. Maybe Guendouzi plays on the right, maybe Danny Ceballos we've been linked with. So there's all kinds of weird and wonderful combinations to be had. But what you can't do is be in a position that we've been in, kind of, I guess, with Ollie Watkins a little bit. I had a bit of a panic when I saw the Brighton lineup, and I saw that there was no Duran on the bench. I was like, oh no, what if something happens to Watkins? We don't really have another forward. This is it with Douglas Luiz. We have to have someone that's able to take the strain off him. We have to have someone that can play with him and play instead of him. And I think that it's an augmentation rather than a replacement is how I'd like to think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we're going to need to do, obviously. And you have to also have that succession plan, don't you? Because even if Luiz doesn't go this year, at some point, if Villa don't qualify for the Champions League, you'd imagine that he is going to move on, as they all do at some point, you know. So there needs to be a succession plan in place, and it's always good to replace the player that's leaving a year before to give people a chance to settle in and get that first season out of the way and under their belt. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see who comes in the door this summer. With those kind of things in mind, really. But we don't want to really talk about him leaving, but it's a reality because of how exceptional he's been, certainly over the second part of this season. So we'll wait and see. But some excellent numbers.
One thing I'd add to it, Andy, and I don't know what my impression is, and I couldn't get a ticket for Love Nor Money on Sunday. You were there. Hmm. My impression is with Douglas Luiz that he really freaking loves it. Like when he scores, he goes mad. Like he seems really embedded in it. Do you get that feeling seeing him on the pitch? Do you feel like this is a guy who's really just wedded to what we're doing in a way that perhaps he wasn't before?
I think yes, I do. I think he's clearly, you know, really, really tuned in now. Whereas before, maybe he'd have those lapses of concentration. I think he's totally tuned into the game. He never looks like he's out of second gear. He's just got that very, very kind of floaty kind of gait and running style, hasn't he? So he always looks like he's completely in control of everything. He never looks like he's busting a gut, let's say. But I like that, you know, he's just a very, very elegant and skillful player, and he's just adding all the elements now, you know. His passing's always been great. He's got a great defensive qualities, which has obviously come from playing in that number six role. So he understands that side of the game really well. But he's got more license now, you know, to make the play and to score goals and create goals. And he's just a wonderful player. And he scored what would have been my goal of the season as well at Tottenham earlier in the season, that 2-0 win. Absolutely brilliant, yeah, finish.
That was exceptional.
And, yeah, it wasn't in the shortlist, strangely, but absolutely brilliant goal, and certainly would have got my vote had it been in there. But yeah, just wonderful player.
Talking about seeing him at the stadium, I just have just give those of us who weren't at Villa Park on Sunday afternoon, give us a flavour of what that was like, Andy, because it was like I had goosebumps. I was watching it with my dad, which was nice, because my dad is the one who took me to Villa Park for the first time all those many, 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 many years ago. So it's nice to watch the game with him from home. And it was just, it was kind of hairs on the back of your neck standing up for me, and I was just watching on television. What for anyone who wasn't there, Andy, what was it like being in the stadium on that day? It looked like the best. It looked just, well, you tell me about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredibly loud, and it was incredibly positive and colourful. One of the great things about it was that obviously everyone, including the Brighton fans, were there for a bit of a party. Brighton fans were obviously celebrating their wonderful season and finishing sixth. So they weren't too concerned about losing the game. And, you know, they were saying goodbye to certainly Alexis McAllister, who looks like he's going. And the Villa fans were obviously just desperate, you know, desperate to support their team and cheer the team on to get the win. And it was, once that first goal went in, it just felt like we were just gonna ride the wave then all the way, and we kind of did. And you know, the fans just kept the momentum going, which is quite unusual at Villa Park, really. But it was just had that massive game atmosphere. It was strange because it was because of the Brighton situation. It had the two elements of being really critical, but also very end of season. So it was kind of weird from that in that regard as well.
The bit that I loved the most is there was just like this roar. Like, I think it was like was during extra time or just before extra time, there was just like this, and nothing had even happened.
Yeah.
What was that about? Like, this roar just came up just like in the last kind of 6 or 7 minutes. It was,
yeah.
It was incredible.
Yeah. I don't know, to be honest, but it was just incredible all the way through, really. The noise, the singing. Obviously, at the start, they gave us the plastic sheets to hold up for the claret and blue stripes at the start of the game. It was really good. It was, you know, Villa fans really did the club proud, I thought. And you know, obviously at the end as well, huge reaction and a big sort of party atmosphere at the end. So it was fantastic. Really, really good. And the players responded in the right way. They didn't cave in, you know, which Villa teams and players of times gone by may have done. But yeah, it was
lads a really made good of day. Different stuff, aren't they, Andy? Cut from a different cloth under Unai.
Yeah, well, they, you know, they know what they're doing, don't they? They know what they're meant to be doing, and it's so. I think, I mean, we're going to talk about Tyrone Mings. You know what he was saying is essentially that, you know, he says anyone could play in my position what I'm asked to do, because it's so simple. It's broken down to be absolutely, you know, foolproof almost. And that's just incredible coaching, isn't it, really? But yeah, great atmosphere. And you know really, really sad that you couldn't get a ticket while you were over, Craig, and did what we could for you.
I got to watch it with my old man. It was not it wasn't a consolation prize. I was happy to be able to do that, because he wasn't going to come to the ground. No, so that's the only way I would have got to do it.
Yeah, well, that's you know, that's great, isn't it? Makes it all worth it as well. Which, but I mean, like we say, it wasn't long. We had to wait for the next goal, kind of the clincher, really. And it was Aston Villa's leading goal scorer, and in fact, probably the leading goal scorer for the last 3 years. 15 goals for Ollie Watkins this season. His highest return for the club, league goals, that is. Really unfortunate not to be named in that England squad last week. I think he just had a bit of a dip at the wrong time, and Callum Wilson came through and finished the season well. But he finished off another really good move. McGinn winning the ball in midfield. Bailey with an excellent pass through to Jacob Ramsey, who kind of half took it round the goalkeeper and laid it off to Watkins, who tucked it into the empty net. Just on Ollie Watkins, really, no doubt that he's hit new heights this season in a Villa shirt, breaking all sorts of records. The consecutive goals in games, consecutive home matches, records have gone. But he does continue to kind of run a little bit hot and cold at various stages of the season. How important do you think it is for Villa to kind of recruit well, to back him up, but also complement him over the summer?
Yeah, I think it's a similar thing to the conversation we had regarding Douglas Luiz. And it's not necessarily about replacement. It's about, again, augmenting, supporting, adding around. It seems as though, and I'm not inside Unai Emery's head, but based on the fact that Duran is yet to start a game, it seems as though Unai Emery does not believe that Duran is ready. It seems as though, again, based on what we've heard from Unai Emery, that Archer is going to have a chance to be looked at when he comes back. Also, as you know, Andy, one of my favourite Villa strikers, Big Keenan Davis. Unfortunately, you should see the face Andy pulled of it. He'll be returning, but he probably isn't going to get a sniff. But no, we are going to need somebody to come in and support Ollie Watkins. We are going to need someone to come in and fight with Ollie Watkins. And the interesting thing will be is these strikers just don't grow on trees. We spoke about before, in order to get a striker of a similar kind of ability to Watkins or a similar kind of output, last summer, Tottenham spent $60 million on Richarlison and Arsenal spent $60 million or $50 million on Gabriel Jesus, but he only had a year left on his deal. So you really, the only people that come close in the Premier League to those kind of numbers or bettering those numbers are the likes of Callum Wilson, Ivan Toney, who obviously we can't touch now. Anyway, Harlan Kane and Rashford and Mo Salah. None of those players are available to us. So we have to be cute. We have to be clever. We have to perhaps scour the European market or scour the youth ranks and bring someone in who can support Ollie Watkins and make sure that we're not so dependent on him, because as robust as he is, he does have these dips in form, and these dips in form have cost him his England place. You know, we would have all put our houses on Watkins being in the England squad this time a month ago. But as you say, he has those bad patches of form, and he starts to get in his head a little bit, and he beats himself up when he misses chances, and it becomes a little bit of a struggle for him. So when he does have those moments again next season, as has been his pattern thus far, it'd be nice to be able to take him out of the firing line and bring someone else in. But again, those level of strikers are really few and far between. So I know that who you would like, Andy, but do you think that's going to happen? Are we going to see the triumphant return of Tammy Abraham?
I'd say it's probably unlikely, isn't it, now? I don't know. The links will never go away, will they? It's clear we tried to sign him. Certainly tried to sign him after the playoff final, but he'd already kind of been tempted back to Chelsea, I think, by the Derby manager at the time, Frank Lampard. So we weren't going to get him then. And I think then 2 years ago, just before we signed Danny Ings, I think it was on the cards, wasn't it, that potentially we might get Abraham, but he went to Roma, where he's playing tonight in a Europa League final. So it's difficult, isn't it? I think the problem with signing someone like Abraham is could you potentially play him and Watkins together? Because you know, I know you need backup and you need players for when players are injured and things like this. But if you sign a player like that, you're not signing him to be a backup, are you? And Ollie Watkins certainly does not deserve to be dropped down to that at the moment. It's more about building around Watkins and helping him flourish even more, isn't it? So It's a tricky one, really. It's a tricky one about how they play it, and they've got to be really careful, because we tried a similar thing with Danny Ings and it just didn't work, did it? So they've got to they've got to tread very carefully, and it might be that I heard it was Greg Evans with The Athletic saying that he felt the best option at this point would be to bring Archer back into the fold and to sign somebody to play off Watkins in that Bailey Buendia role, you know, who's a bit more, you know, a bit better in front of goal, essentially. So brings more goals, more assists, and plays alongside Watkins, and then have Archer as the backup in that regard. So that's an option as well, isn't it? And, you know, not necessarily signing an expensive number nine, who might just confuse the issue in the long run.
Yeah, well, Danny Ings was kind of like the Scott Hogan of this generation. Bought, not to compare, you know, Danny Ings was obviously much better than Scott Hogan, but both of them were expensive signings, diminutive strikers that were signed with absolutely no clue of how they're going to fit into the system. They're identical in that regard, and we have to really avoid that kind of thing again. I'd like to think that we're kind of beyond that kind of foolishness now, that we've moved into a bit of a, you know, that was a bit of a scattergun panic, both in Steve Bruce's January transfer window, where he was throwing lots of mud at the wall and seeing what would stick, with the Tony Zia's mystery money, and then also Perslow's magical three people to replace Grealish, and we know that that didn't necessarily turn out so good either. So thankfully, this time, there shouldn't need to be any kind of scattergun approach. We are introducing players and recruiting from a position of power and a position of strength, our strongest position literally over a decade. So hopefully we can be a little bit more thoughtful and a little bit more considered. But we also do have a whole cluster of forward players that are scheduled to come back. It isn't just Cameron Archer who's coming back. It is also Aaron Ramsey, who can play wide or as kind of a number 10 type player. We also have Jaden Philogene coming back, who is a wide player. We also have, I know they're not going to be used, but we also have, I think, Wesley and Keenan Davis coming back in the door. So there's lots of food for thought for Unai Emery there. And while obviously Wesley and Davis don't have a future, does Philogene, does Archer, does Aaron Ramsey, you'd like to hope that they at least would be given an opportunity in some of these European games, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, it's now or never, I think, for Archer. I think he can't go on loan, can't be keep going on loan every season, really. I think if Middlesbrough had gone up, you could have maybe said, okay, let's send him on loan in the Premier League with Middlesbrough. But not another year in the Championship. It's either be in and around the Villa first team as a genuine option, or we may be having to look to, you know, at what we maybe can get for him this summer. And I think all will become clear. But again, you know, reporters are saying that Emery's very, very pleased with what he's seen from Archer at Middlesbrough and wants to have a really good look at him. So I think last summer the same thing was said by the previous manager, but he
didn't
just
get
had
a
no.
Sniff, did you though, Andy?
Well, no, he had no clue of how to do it. He couldn't bear to, you know, to make that kind of call, really, to give him games. And I think he had one or two injury problems as well, so it didn't work for him at that stage. Let's see when he comes back this summer. Let's see what he's got.
What are you thinking about the other lads? Or you want to reserve judgment on the Philogenes and the Aaron Ramsey of this world, Louis Barry, Finazaz? We've got a whole clutch of young forwards, Andy. Do you think anyone's going to be ready?
I think
anyone else other than Archer?
I think Ramsey needs another season in the Championship. I think that would be fine. You know, I don't think he's necessarily going to be knocking on the door. Tim Rigbunam is for me the big talent, but again, I don't think there's a lot to be gained by having him around the squad not really playing. I think he'd be better off, you know, getting perhaps a better loan than QPR. Although I think that loan would have done him the world of good as well. The others, I don't know. I don't know enough about Azaz. I think he'll take he'll take another step up into the Championship, won't he? Louis Barry's clearly not ready. It's kind of let's see, really. But I think Archer is the one now who either he breaks in or he'll go, I think, this summer. You know, and I think it's a reasonable option in terms of the strikers to have him there as a genuine option behind Ollie Watkins.
I think so too. But then if you've got Archer coming in, what are we doing with Duran?
Well, I think Duran would really benefit from a loan to go and play football. He's very raw, isn't he? He's got so much ability. We saw that cameo against Man City where he clattered one off the crossbar from the edge of the box, which was an unbelievable technique. If that had gone in, it'd have been goal of the season. It was tremendous. But I think he'd do well. You know, going and playing for a good coach somewhere in Europe, maybe, or in the Championship, possibly. Learning his trade a bit, playing some men's football, and you know, getting a few kicks.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is we never know what happens in pre-season. Sometimes people emerge, and sometimes they don't. Mm. But what the other thing is, we just have so many more games now that you would think that would be a good proving ground for someone like an Archer, maybe even for someone like a Tim Orogbunam, as you mentioned there, Andy, to get those minutes in first team competitive football, and so they can play in amongst the existing Villa first team without having the pressure of the Premier League kind of piled on top of them and see kind of where they're at. This is one of the Brucey bonuses, if you like. That's Forsyth, not Bruce. One of the Brucey bonuses of being in Europe.
No, I think that's it. It's let's see. I mean, I think all everything's on the table, isn't it? In terms of Emery, and he'll be, if he thinks he can use a player and they can do a job for the team, they'll be in, won't they? He'll want them around, so that's, you know, it bodes well. I think we saw that with Caden Young. You know, he was someone that he felt that we could use in a certain position whilst players were coming back or players weren't available, or you know, on World Cup duty, that sort of thing. So, you know, it's it'll be exciting to see what happens when they all return.
I am licking my chops. I'm really actually excited for the summer to see what happens, because I think there's just so many. So it's just a new world, man. Like, we're in Europe. It's real. It happened.
Yeah.
And as much as it's a wonderful thing and we have to celebrate, it also comes with challenges, and it means that we now need to manage our squad in a whole different way. But so, I mean, I guess it's quite lucky for us, Andy, that we have a European expert, someone who's managed in Europe 15 years on the trot, who he just reminded us in his latest press conference, Mr. Unai Emery, to guide us through this transition as seamlessly as possible.
Yeah, it is rather lucky, isn't it? It's rather fortuitous that we have this expert on board all of a sudden. But, you know, it's great, and it's really given us a huge boost, hasn't it? I mean, you know, look, we've talked a lot, and we'll perhaps do a season review next week, and we'll talk about just how the season developed, and you know, we'll obviously have a vote and decide which was our favourite manager out of the two this season. But I can't imagine that'll be. I'm sure that's a foregone conclusion. But I mean, let's talk about another one of the heroes of the season, and one of the big reasons that we managed to close out the game against Brighton, and that's of course Tyrone Mings, who's back in the England squad, having regained his place. You know, a really sort of masterful season at the back for Villa. Season started really badly for him. He'd lost his place in the England squad. And then he had the armband taken off him rather publicly by Steven Gerrard, and he was dropped for the first game of the season at his old club, Bournemouth, and we lost. He's came back really, really strong, and he's 2 months ago signed a new contract. Emery will clearly want to strengthen all areas, as we've said, including centre-back, I would have thought. Players like Pau Torres have been linked. And of course, Diego Carlos will come back into the reckoning more next season. Do you think this has been Mings's peak season, best season for Villa? And surely, whoever comes in, he's nailed on now to start next season at the heart of the defence for Villa.
Yeah, I think that we on this show, and any long-time listeners will know that we have been Tyrone Mings acolytes basically from the beginning, from when he walked in to Villa Park and he had that debut where he accidentally trod on that man's face against Reading, and we had our first clean sheet in ages when he partnered old Tommy Elphick at the back. And, you know, I remember we all thought that, or I thought anyway, I wasn't in the podcast at the time, but the general consensus was that Courtney Horse was coming in to be the new centre-back and Mings would be playing left-back. And it turned out not to be the case. But Courtney Horse is another one who will be returning from loan, actually. Another player to be dealt with, but I digress. Mings is a personal hero of mine. The next Aston Villa shirt I get is going to have his name on it, I've decided, so long as he's not sold or anything crazy this season, touch wood. Just because on the pitch, off the pitch, all the stuff we talked about before in terms of his political activism, in terms of his speaking truth to power with some of the less than friendly politicians that we've had in the country, all of those kind of things. And not least his story, his youth work that he does with his academies, which are not to be factories to produce footballers, but actually places which build communities and those kind of things. Just an all-round good guy and an absolute icon for me. He's now in the kind of pantheon of my favourite ever Villa players. And I'm really delighted for him that he's returned to the England side. It was an absolute... It was a joke. It was a travesty. It was insulting. It was criminal that Harry Maguire, someone like Harry Maguire, could be playing so badly for so long, be dropped from the Man United side, that someone like Eric Dier, who has been a terrible defender for many years, would be picked ahead of Mings. Even Conor Cody being picked ahead of Mings, I found quite comical myself, because I don't think Conor Cody is in Tyrone Mings' class in any way, shape or form. But I digress again. I'm delighted for him that he's returned to the England squad. I'm delighted for him that he's finally getting the recognition that he needs. And I'm delighted for him that some of our belief that he had what it took all along has been reinforced by Emery, who took one look at him and said, "This guy's for me. Let's give him a new deal." That is all I need to know. That's all I need to hear. And yeah, Tyrone Mings, absolutely. Unless we're bringing in Franz Beckenbauer and Frank Rijkaard to play at the back, Tyrone Mings will be starting for us, I imagine, in August on the first day of the Premier League season.
Yeah, he's really hit that, those heights this season, hasn't he? He still doesn't get the credit, I don't think, nationally. You know, the things he's achieved. He's playing in a defence which, I don't know, they had a run of games, about 10 games, where they only conceded 2 goals. I mean, that's just absolutely astonishing. And the same goes for Ezri Konsa in many ways, you know. We probably don't talk enough about him either. He's been absolutely magnificent at the back for Villa over the last half a season. And... you know, it would be difficult, I think, to replace either of them. Whoever comes in, however kind of fit and ready Diego Carlos might be, you know, I can't imagine lining up on the start of next season without Mings and Konsa in the back as the two centre halves. I just can't. You know, they are just. It's like Bruce and Pallister. It's like, you know, Adams and Bold. That, you know, that they just go together.
Gerrard imagined it last season.
Well, he did. He wanted to make that point, didn't he? He wanted, you know, his player, his signing to be playing, I suppose. And, you know, but it was just badly handled, wasn't it? But yeah, he's just gone on to different levels now, where previously we used to expect the faux pas, didn't we? Every couple of games, every few games, you know, Mings would would take his eye off the ball and do something a bit daft, and it would either lead to a goal or it would be close. But now he's just so reliable, so solid, you know, brilliant as well going forward, steps into midfield, creates the extra man, creates the overload. And the way they play that offside trap is just exceptional, really, really is. I haven't got, you know, haven't got many more superlatives to use about the man, really.
Yeah, I'm just proud to have him. We talked about Ashley Young, and certainly he is in my pantheon of Villa favourites with McGrath, York, even old Jackie Grealish, who I'm beginning to forgive after 2 years. I'm not there yet, but I'm moving towards it. You know, he's certainly in that clutch of players, and there are players who aren't always the best players. Like Ian Taylor, for example, was not the best player ever to play for Villa, but he was always one of my favourites too. Big Hugo is in that conversation also, and certainly this guy now, Darren Mings, is cemented himself for him and John McGinn to be with us in that game I just mentioned against Reading in the Championship, to be with us in that away game at Rotherham, for them to have, both of them to have been on this journey with us, and for them now to be lining up in 2 months, potentially in Europe against European competition for Aston Villa is absolutely bonkers. It's been just an incredible journey, and yeah, Mings goes down in Villa folklore for me. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely. And McGinn for me, I think I probably feel the same about McGinn as you do about Mings, and he was another one. You know, we'd all said this will be his last season for Villa because he was just sinking at the start of the season. He had no direction. He had no idea what his role was other than to, you know, run around and be angry and aggressive, and, you know, and it just didn't work. And now he's playing the best football he's ever played for the club, and it's just incredible. And when people have talked in the past about him having a 40 or 50 million price tag, he's now looking like that sort of player in midfield, I think. So, you know, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they actually make the improvements to this team when it comes to it. But I'm sure we'll find out in due course. Good luck to Tyrone Mings in the England squad in the games coming up. I hope he gets to play, and I hope he does well and keeps his place. That'd be great. But of course, we're into the summer now, and got a few weeks off. The players are on holiday and everyone's, you know, having some downtime. And then the fixtures will be announced for next season in 2 weeks. and the players will be back and ready for the US trip and their 3 matches over there in that Premier League tournament that they're part of, which you will be in attendance, Craig, I dare say.
Oh, yes, I will be there at Eagle Stadium, Lincoln Financial Field, on July 23rd. And if you're there, come say hello, because I will be, perhaps, I will have ascended to a higher plane of wonderful mindfulness, because I'm just going to be so overjoyed. It's going to be, I don't know, that I could get anything more surreal than Aston Villa playing in my local stadium, NFL stadium in Philadelphia, which I live like 4 miles, it's like 4 miles, 4 or 5 miles from my house. I could walk there if I really wanted to. I'm not going to walk there, but I could. Like, it's absolutely bonkers to me that this is even happening. So I'm getting overwhelmed about it already. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Sounds well set up for a pub crawl, if you ask me. 4 miles, that's
well, in the US we do tailgating, which is not what you might think it is down the M42. It's a kind of it sounds really crap, but it's actually a lot of fun. Everyone drives to the event and in the big car park, and there's like music and games and drinks and stuff, and you go there a few hours early and there's like a carnival atmosphere. That will be what we'll be doing. And it's yeah, there'll obviously be a designated driver. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, don't worry. If anyone was getting the wrong idea, it won't be me. But it'll be someone. Probably the missus. It's going to be a whole event. But just in terms of the summer, Andy, you've mentioned it already. Some of these names we've been linked with. Is this for real?
Well, the links are obviously real, aren't they? A lot of them are coming out of the Spanish media, which I suppose makes sense. It's just whether we are being used as a little bit of a stalking horse for some of these deals to get the big clubs, to quicken their act up a little bit. Obviously, the one at the moment is Marco Asensio from Real Madrid, who looks like he's not been able to agree a deal to stay at Madrid. And he's got obviously interest from the likes of Paris Saint-Germain and other big clubs, and including Aston Villa. And apparently Unai Emery has been in touch with him. So we'll see. But we had similar stories around João Felix, I believe, in January. And wasn't there another player, I think, that we were quite high-profile player we were linked with, and it seemed like it was going to happen, and then it didn't. So we just have to wait and see, and I would encourage everyone to take some of these links with a pinch of salt. But the fact that we are...
I put it in the group chat the other day that, you know, I grew up with us being linked to Kevin Doyle every summer. So this is all a bit... It's all a bit. You might have to Google who he is, but it's like, oh, you're Villa in for Kevin Doyle every year. Do you remember that? Every summer we're in for Kevin Doyle, allegedly. I don't know if they're on the wind up or whatever. But now we're being linked with Asensio, Pau Torres, Ferran Torres. It's a whole different ball of wax.
Yeah,
and now we've also been linked again with my favourite Leicester City player, Harvey Barnes, as well.
Yeah.
There's some links coming up there, and obviously with them being relegated, that is potentially somebody that could have some legs. And it's just amazing to think that we could be already the seventh best club in the country now, which is quite nice, after being maybe like the 30th best a few years ago. It's quite nice that we could potentially really strengthen our position and get even better than we already are.
Yeah, it's certainly really exciting. And, you know, I just, for me, I'm just trying to take the view of once it's confirmed, I will get excited. And of course, we have trusted reporters, don't we, who generally get it right when they report a deal happening. You know, the likes of John Percy and so on tend to be the ones that have the good information. So we'll just wait and see. And I think I'm sure over the next 2, 3, 4 weeks we'll start to see some movement. Obviously, they've gone very, very early with the announcement about Ashley Young. They didn't really have to do that so quickly. They're obviously keen to get on with things and, you know, make sure they've, you know, they're on top of things this summer.
Well, we'd have seen in the last 2 years, Andy, a very early signing. We had Buendia 2 years ago. Straight out the blocks, we signed Buendia from under the noses of Arsenal. And then last year, obviously, I think we announced Kamara the day after the season had finished in France. So we are potentially poised, ready to do that once more. And maybe there's a name we haven't even heard, and it's just going to be a, like it was a bit with the Danny Ings signing. You just you have no idea, and there he is with the scarf, and you're like, oh my goodness, we're moving in different ways. We're swimming in different waters. You know, we've gone from Iceland to Waitrose, and it feels good.
Yeah, well, certainly that's more the Villa way these days, isn't it? I think Diego Carlos as well last year, I think no one saw that come in. That happened very quickly out of the blue, and that was clearly lined up well before, like you say, Boubacar Kamara. None of us saw the Bednarek signing come in either, which was such the other end of the scale. But, you know,
that's... Just a note on that, as you brought that up. I don't know if Unai Emery, this is a complete tangent, and I know that we're out of time, but I don't know that Unai Emery gets enough credit for the choices he made in January in terms of not only not signing players to fill out the squad, but also kicking people the hell out the door. Like, Augustinsson, get out. Bednarek, get out. Sanson, Nakamba, etc., etc., get out, because you're not going to help me moving forward. I need the right people in the room now. And I don't know that gets spoken about enough, and you just reminded me, so I wanted to mention it.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, and I think that might be the case this summer, obviously not in necessarily in Ashley Young's case, but certainly one or two other players, you know, he will make those decisions on, won't he? And hopefully we can maybe realise a bit of value on some players as well, which would be a novelty. Yeah, we shall see, and we shall follow it with interest. But I think we'll call it a day there, Craig. It's been great to have you back on at a normal time for you as well. I think.
Yeah, this is highly irregular that we're both talking at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I see now why Daniel's normally got a nice scotch in his hand, because I'm feeling like I should have one.
Yeah, that's it. Absolutely, and. Yeah, so it's great. So you know, hopefully we'll be back. Perhaps next week we'll try and do a bit of a season review, and talk about cast our minds back over the season and talk about some of our highlights and lowlights, and then possibly have a bit of a break, and come back ready for the European and the new Premier League campaign next season. But thanks for joining me again, Craig, and thanks to everyone for listening, and thanks for sticking with us all season as well. It's been absolutely great to carry on recording these shows for everyone, and hopefully you're still enjoying them. We certainly get some nice feedback, so thanks very much for that. Yeah, and enjoy the cup final Saturday, I guess. Let's see if Man United can stop the... stop that treble happening. And we'll hopefully speak to you again next week. Until then, stay safe and up the Villa.